Good morning. We're glad you're here this morning. Thanks for hanging out with us at Genesis.
I got my tractor shirt. This is how I roll. Can you see it? Is it clear out there? And my Macoupin County Farm Service Company hat on. I should fit right in real good here in Eureka right now. Especially if I just drive on the other side of the river. I'm married into redneck. Did you know that? my wife grew up on a farm, and when I met her, she didn't really come across that way. But the first time I was with her family, I was like, "Oh man, these people." Jeff Foxworthy, he did all his "You Might Be a Redneck." Every single one he ever did describes somebody in her clan. It's just honest to God truth. And because of that, it was kind of cool. I met Heidi, got to know she and her family. And what happened is not only did I marry way, way up, but I got, a couple thousand acres to hunt on in the deal. And so that was a good part of the process. But as I got to know her family, her dad actually spent his life farming upwards of 2,000 acres. I mean, this is grain farm. This is growing this stuff, growing corn and soybeans and wheat and, stuff like that. And, you go to the store and you buy bread, or you go to the store and you buy, corn, or you buy, corn oil or whatever, the different things that is made from corn or soybeans. We just kind of pick it up off the shelf. But you don't really think about all the stuff that goes into a farmer preparing, having a good harvest. And it's a big deal that starts, about the time they are running the combines through the field. And by the way, if you don't know what a combine is, combine's a big old fat tractor that has these things on the front of it that actually pick or harvest the corn, the wheat. If you've never seen it, if you're one of these people, you've been like confined to the city all your life, right now is a good time to drive out to the country to see one of these big tractors as it's going through the field harvesting soybeans or harvesting corn or whatever it is they're picking at that time. But about the day, 2 days after they finish the harvest, they got to start thinking, all right, what are we doing next year? How are we going to have the right crops? How are we going to get what we want out of the field? And so we're at the end of this study of the book of Ecclesiastes. If you're new with us, we've been going straight through this book of the Bible written by this guy named Solomon. Solomon was a king in Israel. And Solomon's life went something like this. He grew up with a dad who really had a heart for God. His dad was broken and was totally flawed, totally messed up. But God changed his life and really gave him a devoted heart to worship Jesus, to worship God. So Solomon grew up in a home where that was part of his life. And early in his life, Solomon really had a desire to follow in the path of his dad, to honor God, to worship Jesus. This shows up in his life as one of the most important things Solomon did in his life as the king in Israel is that Solomon actually built the temple, the key place of worship for the Jewish people in Jerusalem. And the temple was a reflection of the fact that God, his desire was that the people would honor God and worship God. But something happened in Solomon's life as he got older. He started just having little bitty seeds planted into his life. Seeds of pride and seeds of desire for women, seeds for, this insatiable desire for power. And he began to cultivate and nurture those things in his life. And what happens is that the book of Ecclesiastes teaches us that Solomon went on this quest. Literally, he decided he was going to invest his life on this pursuit. And that pursuit, the goal of the pursuit, was to find meaning and value and purpose in life. But the way he decided to go about that pursuit was to try everything under the sun. And so he went on this all-out, crazed, pursuit of everything on this planet, thinking, if I will look at this, if I will get this, if I will try this, I will fill the brokenness and the hole in my heart. And so Solomon first, he pursued wisdom. He was the smartest guy around, a professor at any Ivy League school. But his conclusion is, I figured out that wisdom leaves me wondering, leaves me me hurting, leaves me wishing I knew more. The more I know, the more I realize I don't know, and the more I realize I can't figure things out. And so then he pursued pleasure, and he did this. He was all pro. I mean, he makes Hugh Hefner look like a wannabe, okay? The dude had 700 wives and 300 live-in hookers. The guy had, every night was the biggest party in the place, and he had all the money and all the wealth you could ever imagine. He had so much money and wealth that they counted the gold, but when silver came in, they just put it back by the piles of mulch because they didn't have enough people to count the silver. That's how rich he was. And he had it all. And his conclusion was, I thought this would make life work. I thought this would make life stick. I thought having this many women and this much fun and this much money and this much alcohol and having prime rib every night, that my life would click, it would work. And his conclusion is, it's vanity, worthless, meaningless. And so he pursues other things on this planet. He pursues, you know, just being married, just having a happy heart. He pursues just everything that you and I can try on this earth to fill the emptiness and to find value and meaning. And his conclusion in the book of Ecclesiastes is that everything I tried was worthless, was meaningless. And his conclusion is that if this is all there is, this planet, if this earth, if what is here is all there is, we're hopeless. We have nothing worth living for. Now, that is not where he wants us to land, but he wants us to see that very, very clearly. It begins to remind us, Ecclesiastes begins to remind us that life is very short, that death is a reality, that you know, no matter where we are, what we're doing. Nick was telling me that one of the other guys that he lives with, actually, both he and his roommate got robbed this week, and his roommate got robbed at gunpoint. That will cause you to take a deep breath and go, man, this life is quick. It's brief. The way Solomon keeps using the word vain, and the word vain, that it's vanity. He keeps saying vanity of vanity, all is vanity. The word vain can be mean meaningless, but it can also mean that it's like a vapor. It's like exhaling on a cold winter day when you, and the breath comes out of your mouth, and the next thing you know, it's gone. And he's saying, listen, this is what life is like. And so what we need to figure out is we need to figure out how to make the most, the best of this life, and figure out what is it that we need to pursue? What is it we need to be after? What is it we need to be passionate about? And Solomon says, listen, stuff on this earth, if that's what you're passionate about, if you're pursuing jobs and pleasure and women or comfort or leisure, or it's going to leave you empty. His conclusion is that, listen, the only thing that's worth pursuing, the only worth thing in life that will give a sense of value and meaning is the pursuit of knowing God, of interacting with your creator, of knowing him and seeking the divine. We learn through the New Testament, this is done by trusting Jesus, by coming to the cross, by knowing that Jesus died to give us access to knowing God. And so the last several chapters, if you've been here, have been kind of challenges to say, listen, this is the pursuit we're on. But what happens in life is that there's all kinds of things that grab our attention. It's so easy to say, all right, I really am going to live for God, and I am going to pursue him. I'm going to figure out what it means in my life to really have a deep relationship with my creator. But then I'm on that journey, and life has all these exits, all these cul-de-sacs, all these places where I don't even realize it sometime, but all of a sudden I'm off the highway, and I'm going in the wrong direction again. Things like, you know, religion can be one of those. That I stop trusting Jesus and I just start trusting the fact that I go to church, I'm a good person, I hang out, I do all the right stuff. And all of a sudden, I don't know God, I'm just this religious person. And most of the time, if you kind of get off in the religious cul-de-sac, you just annoy everybody around you because you think you're better than everybody else. And that's not the gospel. It can be just getting caught up in, just the lights of stuff. I mean, there's just so many different places we can get off track. And we don't mean to, it just happens. Well, this is the way Solomon's going to conclude it. And this is why I'm up here in this goofy hat and this tractor shirt, which I think I'm going to have a new shirt. I will see. This one says, this is how I roll. We're going to try to have a good new redneck shirt and a good new redneck hat every week. And I may even one of these weeks find my cowboy boots and wear them up here. We'll see. I do have a couple pair. I actually have a snakeskin set. I don't know if I can find them. Heidi's covering her eyes going, please don't do that. That is not a good look for you. Anyway, But we're going to conclude that the theme of our final series, we're going to call it Harvest, because the idea in the last couple chapters here is, all right, I've told you all this stuff. I've told you to pursue the right thing. And he starts using some farm imagery. We're going to see it in the passage this morning to help us see that even if we know where we're supposed to go, we have to start planting the right things in our lives for us ever to get there. We have to start allowing God to place these things in our lives. Most of us have an idea of what we'd like to see at the harvest. We know that we would like corn, but we are not doing the things that are necessary in our lives to get there. And Ecclesiastes ultimately is a book. Solomon writes this book, and the last two chapters tell us this. He writes this book to young people, specifically young men. I spent the first 20 years of my life in church or hanging out doing work in church with teenagers, and I loved it. I thought I would do my whole life hanging out with teenagers, working with kids, because first of all, you can challenge kids, and they will, you know, they will charge the mountain and not care, and you know, they will go do crazy things for Jesus. And I always loved going on really awesome mission experiences with teenagers, because most adults will sit around and watch, but kids will grab a hammer and a nails and a Bible and go tell everybody about Jesus while they're putting a roof on a house. I mean, I loved working with teenagers, but most teenagers I work with are very much like me. They need to learn by their own experience rather than the experience of others. See, we can learn one of two ways. We can listen to somebody who says, listen, I've been there. I went through this stuff. Trust me, it's not good. Don't end up with the wrong woman. Don't end up being drunk. Don't end up being a lazy bum. Get a job. Get to work. Find a wife. Do the right things. Pursue Jesus. But my story is that I had parents and a church family that loved to tell me those things. But by the time I turned about 17 years old, I decided, listen, that's all well and good, but I have got to find out on my own. And I went out, and for a couple years, I began to plant some things into my life that even as adult today, there is a harvest of some things in my life, some habits, some attitudes, some brokenness that came because I didn't want to listen to somebody else's experiences. I wanted to find out on my own. And what Solomon's trying to do, he's speaking to young people, especially young men, and he's trying to say, listen, I've done this. Start while you're young. Start planting the right things into your life. Don't look for the perfect day that's way off in the horizon. Don't wait for the weather to be right. Don't wait for all your friends to be all lined up with what you believe. You start planting the right things into your life now. Because there is a day when the harvest will come, and whatever you plant is what you're going to get. And see, even the Bible starts off by teaching us this truth. What happens is that God places in creation images that he pulls out of creation and puts in the Bible to help us connect the dots. So in the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis chapter 1, in the story of creation, chapter 1 verses 11 and 12, the Bible's telling us about the story of creation says this. You guys have that up there? Genesis chapter 1, verses 11 and 12. I'll flip over there. Chapter 1, verses 11 and 12, it says this. And God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seeds and fruit trees bearing fruit, and which is their seed. He says, listen, God says, this is the way I'm going to create everything. I'm going to create it so that when I create a corn stalk, it is going to produce an ear of corn. That ear of corn is going to have a seed that if you will put it back in the ground, it will produce another corn stalk. I'm going to make apple trees that will grow apples. And when those apples, you put that apple in the ground, it will grow another apple tree. This is the way I'm going to make creation so that everything will reproduce after its own kind. And if you have an apple tree, it will have seeds. You will get an apple. You put the seeds of the apple in the ground, you're going to get another apple tree. If you put corn in the ground, you're going to get corn. You don't plant corn and get soybeans. You don't plant corn and get grapefruits. You plant corn, you get corn. And this imagery then, God has placed this so that, first of all, farmers aren't guessing. All right, I'm going to go out and plant all the seed. I have no idea what's going to grow. And the farmer goes out to the field and is like, dude, I planted this whole field full of corn, and it grew, and I got, you know, pine trees. What happened? You know, it just doesn't happen that way. It's also an image in our life. One of the crazy things about the whole evolutionary thing is this idea of spontaneous generation. If you've ever heard this, one of the theories that scientists espouse to explain some of the evolutionary process, they've kind of abandoned the idea that it changes over a period of time, and now they're saying, well, maybe evolution just happens all at once, which ought to scare every one of you pregnant women. Because what they're basically telling is that you could go in the hospital and have a baby octopus. You know, some squid-looking thing with 18 arms and it's all slimy, kind of like Men in Black. The fact that pregnant women are going to have baby humans is a good thing. The fact that farmers planting corn, and this is what Solomon in the last two chapters is going to tell us. Whatever we plant in our lives, that's what we're going to harvest. You may be a person who really believes in God, who has a passion to honor God with your life, but at the end of the day, whatever you plant in your life, that's what you're going to harvest. We live in a world that loves the quick fix. We like 20 years of just losing our mind, and we want to go to a counselor. We want that counselor to fix us in one hour session. We like pulling up to McDonald's and driving through the drive-thru and speaking through this microphone and pulling up, and if the guy takes more than 3 minutes, we're mad. We live in a culture where everything's microwave, and we want our lives to work on that level, and we don't realize that the truth of the matter is that planting and harvesting is hard work and takes a lot of time. But if I want to harvest the right things in my life, I've got to come all the way back to the beginning of spring and start thinking, what is it that I want to harvest? What is it that I want in my life at the end? And for this, listen, I feel like anybody who's under the age of 43 is a young person. I'm 42. That's why I said that. Actually, anybody in here, consider yourself young today. What do you want to harvest? What do you want to show up in your life 10, 15 years down the road? We did a baby dedication. What do you want to happen in your kids' lives? What are your hopes? And what Solomon wants to remind us is that the only thing that matters is Jesus. It is God and the gospel working himself out in our lives. The only thing that's going to give you purpose and meaning, the only harvest that's going to work is a harvest of knowing God and letting him transform me. Everything else I pursue, I'm going to pick the plant and go, this is worthless. It's meaningless. This is Solomon's message, that any plant I pick up that isn't the gospel in my life, I'm going to pick it up and look at it and go, I don't want this anymore. But sadly, most of us in this room, we are planting this harvest in our life every day. And Solomon is pleading with us, listen, plant the right things. Do the right stuff. Obey God, honor God, trust him. Plant the gospel in your life. In 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 23, the writer Peter uses this imagery where he says, you have not been born again by an imperishable seed, but an imperishable seed, the eternal word of God. This is what the author is saying to us in 1 Peter. He's saying that God has spoken. If you are a follower of Jesus, God has placed a seed in your life. That seed is the good news that Jesus loves you, died for you, rose again, and you can trust him. And he's planted that into your life. And that seed will take root and grow. And so if you're a follower of Jesus, that's the promise, that there has been a seed planted in you. But you and I need to take that imagery, and this is where Solomon's going, take that imagery and say, what is it that I need to do to plant the right stuff in my life? So wherever you are, I mean, you may be 10 in here this morning, plant the right stuff. Teenagers, this message was written to you. College students, young adults, this book was written to you. Old fogies, it's not too late. The gospel is beautiful because it always offers forgiveness. But what is it that you want to harvest? What do you want to see happen in your life, in your kids' lives, in the lives of your family, the life of your wife, and the life of your husband? The only way you get there is to start planting the right things. And that's what Solomon wants us to see, and that's where he's taking us. And so Our goal this morning is to look into Ecclesiastes and kind of see that. If you have your Bibles, turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. If you don't have a Bible at the end of your row, there are Bibles all at the end of your row for you. We'd love for you to have a Bible and read with us. If you're at the end, take them, pass them in so everybody can have a Bible. I totally forgot to write down the page. What page are we at in that Bible? Somebody shout it out for me. Say it again. 475. If you get one of our Bibles, we'll be on page 475. If you don't have a Bible at a home that's your own, we would love for you to keep that. Take that and give it to friends. We give these Bibles away. It's our gift to you. We just really believe people reading the scriptures, it's a life-changing. It's one of those things that you can plant into your life that will bring a harvest. And Solomon is out of here talking about this. And so I'm going to read the entire text. We're going to read chapter 11, verses 1 to 6, and then I'm going to walk us through this text to kind of show you where he points to these ideas. Chapter 11, verse 1, "Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to 7 or even to 8, for you know not what disaster may happen on the earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth, and if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the way of the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and at evening withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good." What Solomon does is he uses two common, in that day, illustrations that would have been part of people's lives. They would have understood the language. He uses a maritime illustration and an agrarian, agriculture and sea vessels. The first couple of verses, he talks about casting bread on the waters. We'll talk about what that means in a minute. The last four verses, he changes the illustration, and he talks about a guy who's working a field, who's planting a field. And he uses these both these illustrations to help us interact with the fact that we may know what we want at the end. We can start focusing on the returns we would like on our efforts. But if we don't start planting the right things in our life, if we don't start investing in the right way, we will never get the return that we hope for. And that's the point of this entire passage. And so what I want to do is we're walking through this morning. I want to talk to you real quick about four aspects of planting the gospel, planting the goodness of God in your life so that your life will have a harvest of joy. I mean, that's what this whole, all through the book, Solomon has kept reminding us. Rejoice, enjoy life. God gave you this life to enjoy it. And you may be here this morning going, "I don't. I'm not enjoying life. Yeah, I enjoy the party. But when the party's over, I enjoy a relationship I have, but then all of a sudden that leaves brokenness." And Solomon wants to teach us, he wants to show us that we need to be diligent about planting the right things in our lives, and it will produce a harvest that ultimately is a harvest of joy, purpose, meaning, value, those sorts of things, all right? And the first thing he tells us, the first characteristic or aspect is the aspect of diligence, Chapter 11, verse 1, he says, "Cast your bread on the waters, for you will find it after many days." I mean, I, for a long time I read this verse, I had this image of a guy with a loaf of Wonder Bread just throwing it on the waves. You know, he's out there with a, you know, bodyboard, you know, doing some body surfing, and he's got a loaf of Wonder Bread. He just keeps throwing it out there. I was like, what in the world is this guy talking about? But the imagery here is of a guy who has a lot of grain, a lot of bread, a lot of things, and it's time for it to go and be used for something. It's time for it to go to market. It's time for it to be used for something that other than just filling some guy's bins. And he says, cast it on the water, meaning put it on some ships. Ship your grain. Make your investment. And what he's saying, the diligence here for this guy is that he knows that eventually he is hoping that he will have these ships return with some money. But as long as I hold on to my grain and I don't start investing it, I don't start putting it on boats and sending it out, as long as I do that, I will never get the return that I hope for at the end. The picture here is of a guy who's got this big old grain bin full of grain, and he keeps thinking, man, I hope that I get a good amount of money back from this. I hope that it will come back to me in the right ways. But he never actually puts it on a ship. And Solomon's going, dude, for real, seriously, get on with it. Make your investments. Get your grain out of the barns and into ships and get them sailing. Get them on the water. Because if you will get it on the ship after many days, it will come back. You will get a return on your investment. Now, this through church history has been interpreted two ways. One is a picture of investments, of doing the right things with the stuff that you have in money. Another way in church history has been interpreted over the centuries is that this is actually a reference to giving to the poor. Either way, it doesn't matter. The underlying issue here is that whether I'm giving to the poor or I'm investing in things, the imagery here is that I have stuff that I want to happen in my life, but I keep my stuff in barns and I never take the steps so that it will take place. This is kind of where so often we are. We live in this context of, I know what I need to be doing. I know what I want. I really want a life that's like this. I mean, some of us, we're young. We're like, I know that I want a family. I want a wife. I want kids. I want health in my life. But I never take any step to get me there. I can't get out of bed in the morning. I can't hold a job. I can't keep myself passionate about things. Some of us, we keep saying, I know that I need the scriptures in my life, but my daily experience is I reach over and hit the alarm clock every morning and hit the snooze button 42 times, and then I've got to be in a hurry. Some of us know that we need to start sharing the good news of Jesus with our kids. We need to start teaching them and training them the stories of the Bible, but I just never get around to it. I know what I want. I know what I want the harvest to look like. I just can't get the grain out of the barn. And Solomon says, listen, let's get on with it. Let's be diligent about moving ourselves towards the goals, the purposes that we have in our lives. And here's the deal. We got to start with knowing what we want to grow. We have to start with holding some corn. I was always amazed. You drive through farm country, and you'll see these fields. And in these fields, you'll see about every eight rows, there is a different sign. I just thought if you wanted to grow corn, you grew corn. You realize there are literally hundreds and hundreds of varieties of corn, and that a farmer doesn't just need to know that he wants to grow corn. He needs to look at his soil, the type of rain he gets. I mean, just all these things. What is his corn primarily going to be used for? And he has to choose different varieties based on where his farmland is and what he hopes to get at the end. He doesn't just go out and, walk in and go, yo, dude, I got this farm field. I don't know what to do with it. So what do you think? I mean, they put a lot of work into this, and they really think through, what is it that I want to happen when I send my combine to the field? And what Solomon is saying is, listen, we need to have a very clear picture of what we want in our lives. And then we need to get on with it. We need to make it happen. Now, how does this look? I would encourage you that one of the things, especially if you're here and you're a follower of Jesus, one of the things over the next few weeks as we're doing this series of messages that you might want to consider doing is to write down and chart out a life purpose or mission statement. I mean, looking at your life in God's hands, you're pursuing Jesus and trusting God and your where you are in your career, where you are in your family, where you are in your life. What is it that you hope God will do in your life? What is it that you want to spend your life pursuing? We need to work on making sure that we know that we want corn and not beans. The starting point is to be diligent to say, listen, this is what I hope. I hope to get a return. I want this in my life. If you don't know what it is you are pursuing, or as one old saying goes, if you don't know your target, you're guaranteed you're going to hit it. If we don't know what it is that our lives are about pursuing, we're going to have a hard time finding that thing. We're going to get to the end, and we're going to plant just anything and everything in our lives, and then it's time for the harvest, and what we get is not what we hope for. But we never really stopped and said, this is what I hope to grow with my life. And so we need to be diligent. We need to be diligent about this. Second thing is we need to be diverse. There's diversity here. In verse 2, he says, a wise man's heart inclines him to, verse 2 in chapter 11 says, if the clouds are full of rain I'm reading the wrong verses like crazy. Let me start over. Chapter 11, verse 2 says, give a portion to 7 or to 8, for you do not know what disaster may happen. It's kind of an encouragement. Listen, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't throw all of your grain on one ship because there may be pirates or a hurricane. And you just don't know what's going to take place. This becomes kind of a theme of this, the rest of this passage. And what he's saying is there's diversity. And I think the application here, I think all of this is image-based. I don't think Solomon is ultimately stopping in this book and going, oh, by the way, make sure you diversify your portfolio. I mean, that's where you get meaning in life. That would be totally against everything he's kind of said. It's not bad advice. I mean, we've kind of learned that right now, right? You know, to diversify. But that's not where he's going. He's saying, listen, there needs to be diversity in the seeds that you plant, the things that you invest in. And there's a lot of things we could talk about. You know, investing in family and your kids. I mean, I was sitting around yesterday and I was working through it and I kind of got under the gun. I've been sick all week. I've got the worst cold I've had in like 10 years and I'm just worn out. I was at a meeting the first 3 days, got all my stuff getting ready for church backloaded. And so I'm sitting around yesterday feeling the stress of life. I got to get done because I got to stand in front of you guys and do this talk. Okay. And I'm just living in that. And my son comes up and goes, Dad, I want to drive my race car. Now, one of the families in our church, their son got a little older, and he has this had this really cool race car that is, you know, one of these battery-operated things that he just flies in. My son's just kind of figuring out how to drive it, and he loves this thing. He drives down the street, gets around the cul-de-sac, and he thinks he's on the Indy 500, you know. And that one, now, I added that point in time to determine what am I going to invest in. Am I investing in the sermon and my work, or am I going to go spend a few minutes investing in my four-year-old kid? It was easy. I love you guys, but that kid's got my heart. And so I knew at that point in time I needed to go diversify. I need to make sure I was investing my life in the right things. Investing in your own spiritual life. I mean, there's just all this stuff, and we need to start planting the right seeds, but we need to have a clear vision of what that's supposed to look like. But there's all kinds of areas, and we need to be intentional about making sure we are investing the right seeds in our life, all right? Need to keep it moving. Third thing he talks about is determination. Determination is a big thing. Verses 3 and 4, he says, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. Is what he's saying. He's saying, listen, if you're waiting for the perfect life situation to make this stuff happen in your life, it's never going to show up. There is not a perfect day to start walking with God. There is not a perfect day to make a decision to follow Jesus. There is not a perfect day to start saying, I'm going to start investing in the spiritual life of my kids. It's not going to come. There is not a perfect day for planting. And if I spend my life turning around and looking to the clouds coming, going, well, man, it's too windy today. Oh, it might rain. And I start looking at all the equations, the factors that are coming, I'll just stare at the clouds. And then next thing you know, it's the middle of summer and I got nothing planted. And my harvest is going to be horrible. It's going to be a field full of weeds. Is it possible that I plant and my field floods? Yes. Is it possible that I get out and I work my tail off planting my seeds and it doesn't rain for 3 weeks and it all dries up? Yes. Is it possible that the winds come and just blow down all my corn? Yeah. Here's what Solomon's saying. If you live in the, it might happen this, it might happen this, you will never get in the field and start doing your end of the bargain, which is planting. And so get on with it. Quit looking to the sky. Quit looking for that perfect day to start your walk with God. Quit looking for that perfect day, I'm pointing at me, to start your diet. Quit looking for that perfect day to get on the exercise bike. Quit looking for that perfect day to sit down and start talking about spirituality with your kids. Quit looking for the perfect day to reprioritize your life. Today's that day. And it may look like it's going to rain. That's okay. Get her done. All right? That's what he's saying. Just very plain, simple language. That's what he's saying. And so he says, listen, you can't control the outcomes of this. And then the last thing he talks about is dependence, verses 5 and 6. He says, as you do not know the way the Spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. Pretty simple, straightforward. He says, listen, there are things in life we don't control and we can't figure out. I mean, no matter how hard science tries, there is a miracle that takes place when a woman gets pregnant. We're not going to figure that out. And we can't figure out everything that God's going to do. And so there is the part that I am responsible for. Let me tell you what I am not responsible for. I cannot make a seed. Only God can make the seed. It's an act of his grace. And I cannot make the seed grow. But you know what I can do? I can plant it. I can take what God has provided and put it in my life in such a way that it's healthy. And then I can trust God to keep his end of the deal. And that's ultimately what we're responsible for. There is a day that is a harvest. There is a day where you know, end of life or even end of life, where all of a sudden all the things I plant in my life start growing and start showing up. And I'm telling you, part of my life is regret over all the things I planted in about a 4-year period of time when I was a young person. There's a lot of harvest in my life that I just had to throw away and say, I wish I hadn't got this. I've never regretted anything I've planted in my life that came from God. Never. And the challenge that Solomon has, so what keeps us from doing this? I'm going to throw 3 things out, and then we're going to close, we're going to worship, we're going to celebrate. But I think there's 3 things that keeps us from putting our stuff on the ships. And there's more than 3. I mean, I'm just going to share 3 real quick that keeps us from taking the first step of faith. If you're kind of peering over the fence into Christianity, you're like, I'm not so sure if I want to be a follower of Jesus. And you feel like, you know, maybe I do need to just trust Christ. This might be you. If you're a follower of Jesus and you're still trying to figure out things and you're like, I know there's some things I need in my life and I know the harvest that I want, but I just can't get it motivated. Let me share some things that I think it may be behind it. First of all, I think divided worship. What I mean is this, that we have this tendency that we want God, but we want other little gods in our lives to be equal. And as long as I'm trying to pursue God, but I also want to hold on to my little gods, the God of my comfort, the God of my power, the God of my success, the God of being wealthy, whatever it is. And I exalt those things to a place of the divine in my life. I'm never going to get on to planting the things in my life because I really want a field with 2 harvests. I want a field that's full of corn, but I also want to be full of weeds. And the weeds will choke out the corn every time. All right? It is only when I realize I have to follow Jesus. I trust him. He is my God. That's it. The second thing is busyness. Busyness is the economy of the human marketplace anymore. I mean, you ever walk up to somebody and the question is, how's things going for you? What is the standard answer in our culture? I'm busy. My life is busy. You almost feel guilty if you don't respond. Yeah, I'm busy too. But we all are. I mean, it's like the standard American response to life. How's life going? It's busy. Just everybody say it all together. How's life going? Are you busy? Are you going to have a day that you have enough time to sit down and read the scriptures? No. Can you make time? Yeah, if you can be intentional and plant these things. There's never, maybe you have them. I have never had a day where it just showed up and I was like, hey, I got this 2-hour block of time with nothing to do. I'm going to sit down and be with God. It just doesn't show up. Or I think I have it and then one of my kids gets sick. We're busy. We are busy people. We live wire to wire. We need to reorient our lives so that we put the big things in first. We start planning the things in our lives we want. And last thing I think is frustration. Many of you find great struggle, and I do too, in starting to plant things in our lives because we live in great frustration over our past failures. Are you with me on this one? Are you with me on trying to start an exercise program and you've thrown in the towel before you begin because you realize all the times you've failed to make it happen? Are you with me on someone who says, listen, I need to start praying more, but you've made the promise I'm going to pray more 100 times? And here's the great thing about the gospel. You're accepted. God loves you. He does not look on you on the basis of your failures. He loves you and looks on you on the basis of his son. All right, just trust him with the frustration and failures and allow Jesus to change you from the inside out, but start planting. Figure out what that looks like in your life, start planting. We're going to close the service with communion this morning. And the reason we close with communion is it is a response to what God has said. And here's the deal. The only seed worth planting is a seed that comes from the fact that Jesus died for us and wants to transform us. And so it begins with this imperishable, perfect seed that comes from Christ and the fact that he loves us so much that he gave his life for us. And the call of the gospel is that I can't ever be what I wish I was. I will fail and blow this miserably. I cannot be the solution to myself. But Christ will change me and transform me. But he does call me to partner in that by planting seeds in my life that will bring a harvest. All right? And so we experience communion as a reminder that it is the blood of Jesus and the body of Jesus broken for me. Jesus, on the night he died, took the bread and he broke it. He said, this is my body. He took the cup and said, this is the new covenant of my blood that is given for you. And so communion for us is a time where people who are followers of Jesus acknowledge that the solution to their struggle is Jesus and the cross. And so figure out what that looks like. Just want to challenge again, start working on a life purpose statement. What is it that you want to harvest at the end? How does that look? If you want to, you know, zip me an email, I'll even give you some ideas to get you started if you're struggling with that. And then start planting. I'm going to pray. Some of our guys are going to come out. They're going to lead us in time of worship. We're going to have communion. We'll have you come straight down the middle aisle and participate in communion this morning if you feel led and you are a follower of Jesus. If not, just hang loose and pray and seek God. But I'm going to pray. We're going to celebrate communion, and we're going to look to Jesus as the solution to me. Lord, I love you and I praise you. Thank you for the seeds you've given us. And I just pray, Lord, you'll help us figure out what it looks like to plant those things in our lives. And I thank you ultimately that Jesus and the gospel and the cross is the solution to me. I thank you that even though I've failed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, and I even planted things in my life that I've had harvests that I regret, even though those things are there, that you have forgiven and cleansed and made me whole. And I worship you for that. And so this morning as we celebrate and we sing and we worship, I just honor you. And thank you. Lord, I pray for Nick right now. I just pray as he's kind of dealing with this hard thing in his life that you'll just bless him and give him a real sense of your presence. You'll show your love to him. In your name I pray. Amen.